Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday edition, Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. Lots to talk about in today's program. Mall violence is continuing in the U.S. Thought that would slow down, but it keeps going. Details about that. San Francisco, sanctuary city, well, it's falling apart. It's not working out too well. New report about that. And the Obama administration continues to lash out at Israel on their way out the door. More stories about that topic, that and more, this edition, Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm. Have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And if you would like to follow us on Twitter, please do that at kpcgfm. If you'd like to send in some comments, questions, recipes, etc., send those to comments. We might do a cooking show. You never know. Comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk and Abraham Blondeau with me here today. And everyone's getting a little tired, I think. Wednesday, that mid part of the week, you know, you get kind of get to that point where you're like, so how many days to the weekend again? But yeah, it's good. We have a musical going on here at the Herbert W. Armstrong College, and everyone's working on that, so that's taking a little extra effort too.
Yeah, it's August. Wednesday is always hump day, where you have to get over the peak of the week until you go downhill to weekend. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a hard work, but it's pretty fun seeing everything come together.
Yeah, there's a lot more information about that musical. It was on Music for Life this week, if you heard that program. If you didn't, go back and listen to it, archives at kpcg.fm, where Ryan Malone talks about that musical that he is heavily involved in. And you can also get more information at armstrongauditorium.org. So there's a lot of places to get info and tickets and so forth. That's coming up Thursday night. That's tomorrow.
Yes.
Got to keep your days. Got to keep your days together. I was watching some basketball highlights the other day. They were talking about one player who's a rookie, first year. Takes a while to get used to it. And he was saying that he can't keep the days of the week straight because they're always traveling. So sometimes it feels like that. You think, well, what day is it today? Especially when it gets really busy.
Yeah, especially when it's the same thing every day and there's no distinction between the days. Then it's easy to get think you're repeating the same day over and over again.
Groundhog Day. Yeah, those sports teams, especially like NBA teams, I mean, they're in a different city almost every night. And I suppose it's kind of exciting for the first time or two, but after a while, you're like, oh, we're in, you know, Philadelphia for the 400th time, you know, yeah, in my career or whatever. So no offense, Philadelphia, but different cities, different nights. This mall violence that's been going on, it's not that uncommon, I guess, around the holiday time. But usually there's a day or two, and then now it's like it keeps going. Police say 200 descend on Philadelphia. Sorry, Philadelphia. They're just having a bad. They're having a bad run here. 200 descend on Philadelphia mall in second night of violence, and the whole thing was organized on Snapchat. So that's what the kids are on these days. Snapchat, social media platform. Police say they were called with a report of an extremely large crowd of juveniles causing a disturbance at around 6:45 p.m. at the Philadelphia Mills Mall. Several dozen people made their way inside the food court where things began to escalate. No pun intended. Usually you got to take the escalator to get there. Things are escalating. So they went to the food court area, and that's when they started running around yelling and screaming and acting disorderly, according to the Philadelphia police chief. He says they were pelting cops with fountain sodas and all kinds of trash, according to a vendor inside the mall. Police say the gathering was planned on Snapchat, adding that one of the individuals arrested may face felony charges after allegedly attempting to strike a police officer. And I did see, I don't know if it's this mall, but some malls are now starting to say, look, if you're an unaccompanied teenager, you can't be in here. Now, how are you going to enforce that? Because some people look like they're teenagers, but they're older. Some people look older, but they're teenagers. How do you know? You know, they have to hold their mom's hand? I mean, I think this can be hard to enforce. I think it's a good rule if you can enforce it, but I don't know how you enforce it.
Yeah, especially since malls cater to teenagers. I think that's the main demographic for the most part. But this
and older people taking walks.
Yes,
the two groups. Yes.
Well, there is where I lived in Canada. It's a smaller city, and there was a mall about 5-10 minute walk from my house. And they had a diner in Zellers. Now, Zellers, for anyone, it's a Canadian store. It's kind of like the discount version of Target. And I think they went out of business over the past few years. But there was a diner in there.
Yeah.
And every time I went in that store, there was always the same older people just sitting there. And that was like their routine, getting out of the house and stuff like that. But I was just always there. It's just so consistent. It just struck me as something that was pretty amazing.
The mall routine. Yeah. So it would be scary no matter who you are. You see a large group of teens hanging out and you think, to me, it's like if there's four, I get nervous. But it depends on what they look like and what they're doing. But if you get a couple hundred showing up causing havoc, sometimes these groups steal things. This didn't sound like that. This just sounded like, let's just cause problems. I have a question, though. Where are the parents? Where are the parents for these kids? They just show up to the mall, cause trouble, go on with life? Where are the mom and dad don't know where they were? Is there a mom and dad? You know, that's the problem.
Yeah, especially for such a huge group. I mean, 200 kids. That's a sizable part of any community. And just the fact that this is becoming common, or it's not out of the blue when these things happen, and that there is really no point behind it besides causing trouble. I mean, there was no really goal besides disrupting everything in the mall. So it is a little interesting. It shows how dangerous social media can be. If it's in the wrong hands, it can be used to organize people in a negative way. But yeah, that's always the number one question is, why weren't the parents able to figure this out? Or why could their kids just go without perhaps knowing what was going on?
In a normal situation, you'd have two parents for each teenager. So the headline should read something like, you know, 200 teens show up and are quickly taken by 400 parents. They had overwhelming force and they removed the problem. No one had to worry about it. So anyway, that's a problem because those teens become adults and, in some cases people might say, well, it's, you know, just fun and games, but it causes problems. And then what do those people become, you know, when they get older? A lot of times the problems escalate as they get older. No pun intended. Escalator. Food court. It's all tying together. Philadelphia. This is a theme, an unintentional theme building here. San Francisco has been known, it is known as a pretty liberal city, obviously, and a sanctuary city. And they've been working for years to not have as many rules. We don't like rules, man. And not as many police. And, of course, what has occurred? Well, it's become a paradise on Earth. Nope, actually not. Sorry, misread that. It says, after 20 years of envelope-pushing changes to grow government and ease law enforcement, the once shining city by the bay has turned into a terrible place, they say. They have a couple of highlights, lowlights. Property crime runs amok. They're having all sorts of problems. You know, you don't want to live in a city where people are just doing whatever they want on the streets, because if you own the house, they're not going to respect that. They don't respect laws. They have an online map that is needed to track human waste on city streets. That's an actual thing that they have to do, I guess, so they can avoid the street or know how to clean it up or something.
Yeah, that's something you don't see on every weather channel across the country.
You know, they always do the traffic report. You have to do the human waste report with the chopper from it. Stay off of whatever street today.
Yeah.
Or you go to the park and they have those signs that say, please pick up after your dog. You'd have to have one that says, please pick up after the non-law-abiding citizens.
Your family members. Yeah.
Right. Terrible. It's like a third world country. It's terrible. Discarded syringes are common sightings. You want to take your kids for a walk? Step on a syringe? You know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Those are the things you see in or would hopefully not see in like a backwoods motel or places where there's a lot of illegal activity, places where you stay far away from. But the fact that this is one of California's biggest cities, it's iconic, a very important place for a lot of reasons. And the fact that it's basically descending into not only third world, but middle age era sanitation. I mean, that's a huge problem.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I thought, well, they don't like laws. They don't even like sanitation laws. Those laws protect us to keep us from getting all these diseases that you see other places. Public urination is so widespread that it has damaged subway elevators and escalators. To tie into an escalator again. building walls and power poles. That's a lot of that activity.
It's a lot of water erosion.
A lot of problems there. So, again, yeah, they're just descending into this third world situation. And, you know, I saw a documentary years ago that talked about San Francisco in the 60s, whatever the summer of love was. I don't remember if it was 67 or somewhere in there, that Hyatt-Asbury region of the community. And they had this whole documentary about it. And, of course, they were kind of highlighting it like it was the golden age and the people loved it and all that. But what happened when the people descended on the city? STDs, illnesses, not probably total starvation, but a lot of people just didn't have anything to eat. They all showed up to this park, and they were just going to sit there and live and be in love. And okay, but you didn't. Nobody's working. There's no money. No one has any food. They're not respecting health laws, personal, just hygiene laws. And so you had diseases just explode. That's what happens when you just jam a bunch of people in an area and say, do whatever you want. So that happened in that summer of love, quote unquote. And it's happening now. They say there's a very tolerant attitude. You can very much do anything on the streets you want, according to Mark Jaffe, director of research at the California Policy Center think tank. As members of a civilized society, there are things you should not accept. But we have ignored that, and there is nobody on the other side setting limits. You know, try it with the little kid, or better yet, don't. No limits. Do what you want. It's chaos.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a great case study of what happens when you remove the normal law and order that we've seen in Western civilization, especially in America. And people who want to get away from a lot of rules in America on immigration, let's say, or on other just basic things we've been doing for decades, they should study San Francisco and see what's happening, because that's what's going to happen to the rest of the country if similar measures are put in place. And I think despite all the hype and the cheerleading of why San Francisco is such a great case for the change, liberal progression, obviously the fruits are that it's not, and that it's really unraveling, because you need rules to regulate human behavior, because human behavior doesn't automatically choose the best common denominator or the best choice. Most of the time we do choose something that's probably not the best for everyone, and so rules help regulate that and try to find some kind of common ground there. Yeah, but yeah, it's just a terrible fruits of the policies in place.
Yeah, and you look at the two of those stories today, we're talking about two opposite coasts of America, San Francisco, Philadelphia. Philadelphia having these kids overrun a mall, and then San Francisco just a continual destruction of the city because of lawless behavior. So, yeah, not good. And you look at who votes, how people vote, They all are liberal progressive on the coast usually.
Yeah.
But look at this, what the society's become. Not saying that the conservative side's got it figured out either, but certainly one side's a little further down the path, I think, than the other.
Yeah. There's political ideologies don't solve problems like this. It's a matter of personal character and so many other things. But at the same time, there are very basic laws that do need to be kept. And that's true of any ideology that you have. There need to be rules. And so I think, like you mentioned, this is just a good spectrum of what's happening across from coast to coast in America, across the whole country, and see that no matter where you are, there is some kind of decline going on, especially in the cities.
The political transition that is occurring is not going smoothly. Can you believe that? This, according to CNN.com, Donald Trump accused President Barack Obama on Wednesday of making, quote, many inflammatory statements and roadblocks during the president-elect's transition to the White House. He tweeted this. Of course, when he tweets, the world listens. He says, doing my best to disregard the many inflammatory President O statements and roadblocks, thought it was going to be smooth transition. not. Haven't heard that phrase in a while. Yeah. Not. That was a big while back. But that is happening. There's been a lot of comments out there where the president, President Obama, has not been very gracious.
Yeah, especially when the day after the election, they had the big meeting and they're talking about, there was still, you could still see awkward tension between the two, but they were trying to put their best foot forward. And President Obama said, I'm going to follow President Bush's example and just have the best possible transition. But if you look at what he's done since he spoke those words, it's been the opposite, where maybe behind the scenes he's cooperating on a logistical level. I don't know about that. But if you look at what he's been doing, what he's been doing in the UN with Israel and just many, many other things he said, where he's just making things worse for Donald Trump, that when he is president, he has all these issues he has to fix. Or basically, President Obama is trying to entrap him legally where he has to continue certain policies no matter what. And I think that's really what's going on here. And Donald Trump has been speaking out against those, and that's good. But at the same time, you can't really stop President Obama in his last, 30 days he's in office now.
That ties into a little segment I like to call What Now? He reads something, you're like, now what was that? President Obama had his exit interview. We talked about that a little bit the other day I forget who it was with. But anyway, he had David Axelrod, I guess. It was an interview with him, and it was for the Axe Files. That's his show, his podcast. It's not about logging, I don't think. And so this is what the president said. He's talking about how his mom raised him, and he says, for all the ups and downs of our lives, there was never a moment where I didn't feel as if I was special, that I was not just this spectacular gift to the world. What now? I'm all for, encouraging your kids and stuff, but if you raise them with the belief that they are a spectacular gift to the world, that'd be a hard person to get along with, because what about the guy you run into? He's a spectacular gift too. And two spectacular gifts have a hard time getting along usually.
That's true. Yeah. Well, I think that's not to interpret it too much, but that sounds like a messiah complex to me, or could become one, that you're special and that you have a gift and you're the only one that can do certain things. And there's only one messiah, period. Yeah. And so for a human to take that upon themselves, it usually doesn't end up too well. And just last night I was reading something about Napoleon and how he had a lot of great talents, brilliant man, brilliant military leader, even brilliant administrator in government. But his biggest flaw was his vanity, and he didn't know when to stop. There were several times where if Napoleon stopped, he probably could have avoided final defeat. And I think we see that with President Obama. Even after his party is completely destroyed, the American people obviously reject his policies and his vision of hope and change. Even in this inglorious defeat, while being a lame duck president, he still thinks that he could have won the election. He still thinks that he is the one, he's the special one that can do all these things for America. And he just doesn't know when to stop.
He also said that he's learned from his mother that you need unconditional love, and that's what he has. And that's a nice thing to have, I suppose. But then you look at the way Israel's being treated. You look at the way just anybody that disagrees with his policies are being treated. I don't see any love there. Isn't there something in the Bible about loving your enemies?
Yeah.
Seems like there's something in there. In any event, those are just really big words, but yet the fruits are the exact opposite.
Yeah. Maybe he should ask David Petraeus if there's some unconditional love between those two. But yeah, it's just obviously his words and his actions never meet up. And this is something that's very clearly seen over all the past 8 years, where he says one thing, but he does the other. Or he does it in such a way where he just can't be entangled. Or it sounds good, but there's obviously a meaning behind what he's doing.
Yeah, or it's very vague and you can't really, you're like, what are you talking about? But anyway, just some interesting comments there. You can read more about that at CNN.com. There's a lot of talk these days about sitting too much. It's bad for your health. And should you stand? Should you sit? Should you move around? Whatever. Well, maybe there's somewhere in the middle here. New York Times says a new study shows that you should walk 5 minutes and then work throughout the day. If you walk 5 minutes an hour, they say that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I think that's sounds pretty good. I remember even in school, my teacher saying that if you move around a little bit once in a while, your brain just functions better. So that we would do that in class, and I think it did work pretty well.
Yeah, that's what they're saying here. They say, are you stuck at your work desk? Standing up and walking around for 5 minutes every hour during the workday could lift your mood, combat a lethargy without reducing focus and attention, and even dull hunger pangs, according to an instructive new study. They say there is growing evidence, of course, that long bouts of uninterrupted sitting can have undesirable physical and emotional consequences. Studies have shown that sitting motionlessly reduces blood flow to the legs, increasing the risk for a variety of things. People who sit for more than 8 or 9 hours daily, which for many people that describes a typical workday, also are at heightened risk for diabetes, depression, and obesity. So they say if you can get up, move around 5 minutes an hour at least, that'll help you out. Though maybe not everybody can, but usually you can go. You can get up and take a quick stroll somewhere. Go to the break room, eat a donut. Oh, no, don't do that. That wouldn't help any.
Well, it does remind me, a lot of famous thinkers, when they're thinking or when they're brainstorming, they pace back and forth. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what they're describing here. It's a good moment to get your thoughts together, pace back and forth, and usually the body moving does help blood flow to the brain and does help you concentrate usually on the thoughts you're trying to achieve.
Yeah. So anyway, it's kind of an interesting study. There's more there at the New York Times. They get into some of the ins and outs of it, but I think it's just kind of common sense. They say that's even walking 5 minutes an hour is more effective than walking, say, 30 minutes at the beginning of the day. You know, sometimes people say, well, I'll do it here. This is my walk time, or this is whatever. And that's not bad either. But it appears that it might be even a little better to just do it throughout the day. And I think that just gets back to the fact that humans are made to move. We weren't made to just sit in one spot all of the time. And so it's kind of common sense, but everything old is new again, the common sense.
Yeah, I think as we've said many times, moderation is the key. As long as you're moderate and you're active, an active lifestyle, and you do move around throughout the day. It's harder in some places, I know, but if you can just move around even a little bit in your cubicle, that probably will help a lot.
This is a really interesting story here. Of course, you've heard of people getting a DUI, driving under the influence. A man in California is fighting a caffeine DUI, and the state won't back down. His name's Joseph Schwab. He's 36 years old. He was pulled over on August 5th, 2015, by a California Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control agent in an unmarked car who claimed the 36-year-old had cut her off and was driving erratically. The agent administered a breathalyzer, and it displayed that he had no alcohol in his blood. After that test, he was put in a county jail and had his blood taken for an additional toxicology test looking for other drugs. Nada. Then they sent it out later and found out he had caffeine in his system. And so he's going to come up for trial under driving under the influence of caffeine because the California law is a drug is any substance that isn't alcohol that might impair your driving. I think he's just a bad driver. I don't think it has anything to do with caffeine.
Yeah, I mean, caffeine can affect behavior in a huge way, but at the same time, from what I've seen, there are plenty of drivers, when they're not under the influence of anything, that could probably be pulled over quite often.
Yeah.
So I think this is more of a instance of bad judgments and bad behavior while just driving, like... and maybe driving classes would be better than a lawsuit. I don't really know.
Yeah, well, you could be, I mean, if you were driving poorly, you could be driving under the influence of a hamburger or lack of a hamburger if you were hungry.
Yeah.
Or the influence of sugar or you had too many carbs. I mean, there's always stuff in your system. And if it's not an illegal drug or, you know, some sort of an intoxicant, I don't think it has much to do with your driving. I can't imagine that it would. But even so, it's not illegal to have caffeine.
Yeah.
I don't, so it's a strange thing, but they're saying, well, he might get in trouble for it. I think it's just bad driving. Maybe you should just get a ticket and move on.
Yeah. It's, seems like an odd, thing for the state to pursue. I don't know if they're trying to set a precedent or something like that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, just fine him or do something and move on. Why bring up this lawsuit about making caffeine a certain stimulant that you can't have while you're driving?
Yeah. I mean, and people do have to be responsible with it. I mean, there's plenty of stories about people drinking, like, say, Red Bull or some of those things and too much and having problems to some extent. But, yeah, so strange situation. Never heard of that. Poor Starbucks, right, or any of those places. You have to... No more drive-thrus, right? Can't drive through Starbucks anymore. You'd be under the influence of DUI for caffeine consumption. Make mine a decaf. I'm driving.
Yeah. those new tuxedo Starbucks drinks, those would be highly illegal if you're driving.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other day, if you recall, for those that are avid listeners, we told our friend Grant Turgeon to go out and try one. I don't know if he did, but I joked with him that he wouldn't be there the next day if he did. So maybe that's what happened. He had one of those tuxedo drinks and it was too much. So of course this one happened. This is kind of a funny story. A few days ago, there was a Twitter user. He tweeted a video of two guys on the streets of Dublin, Ireland, impersonating Conor McGregor's fighting moves. Conor McGregor is a very famous MMA MMA fighter. He's an artist. I don't know. Why did I say artist? Why did that come to my mind?
Some people might think it's art.
Yeah, that's weird. MMA artist. He is in the art of fighting, the fighting arts.
I think it is martial arts.
That's so, why I said it. Okay. Yeah. I was like, why would I say that? There is a connection. Yeah. Martial arts. So he's an MMA fighter, which is mixed martial arts. And very famous for people that follow that. Even if you don't, he's kind of almost a celebrity, and he's known for being pretty outlandish and successful in fighting. So these two guys are just goofing around on the street, mimicking his moves, having a good old time. A black Escalade pulls up, and it's Conor McGregor inside. And he pulls over, and he rolls the window down. Yeah. And he just he thought it was funny. So so anyway, they got away with out any problems there, but how odd. Some people think it was a publicity stunt, but I don't know. Kind of strange.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in Dublin walking around there, and never occurred to me someone famous could be driving past you. But yeah, that's really funny. Good timing as well that the imposters were captured by the true man there.
Yeah, you see that, like, that scenario in movies or TV shows, you know, where somebody's mocking someone and they come up behind them and everyone's like, you know, oh, don't do it, and they keep going. But yeah, rarely does that happen in real life, especially somebody that could harm you.
Yeah.
Like an MMA fighter. So anyway, it's kind of a funny little video that was out there, and I don't know if it just happened. If it just happened spontaneously, that's pretty amazing. If it was set up, then it's not a big deal. But
yeah, they're lucky he was having a good day, I guess.
Yeah, you don't know. He's known to be a little bit testy, so you know, you never know what you're going to get from him. But yeah, I've been in Dublin as well, and it is, I mean, it's large, but it is a smaller town. I mean, I could see that happening. He lives there. I mean, I could see it happening.
Yeah, it's especially the popular districts. It is a smaller part of the city. I do have a funny story there. My brother and I were walking around seeing the sights, and we did take a bus into Dublin from where we were staying. And we were on our way back, and we were just at a bus stop waiting for the first bus. And there was this homeless man walking around, and he's just asking people for food or anything. And I had some, I think it was some licorice I was eating. I bought from a store, had a drink and some licorice. So he's walking by me. He's like, I won't do my Irish accent for the sake of everyone listening, so we don't lose our listeners.
Your French-Canadian Irish accent?
Yes. but he just asked me, he's like, hey, can I have some of those? I'm like, yeah. So I just... I didn't even move my hand. I just had the bag in my hand. He's reaching, took a handful, and kept walking. And said thank you, I believe. But
yeah, I don't put your hand in the bag.
Yeah, I didn't. I was going to, like, I didn't expect him to move so quickly. But yeah, I guess he was eager.
So you think he was a homeless guy?
Yes, basing on his appearance.
Huh. I didn't see any. Maybe I wasn't in the, I was in the real touristy areas, but I didn't really see anybody that I noticed to be homeless. But.
Yeah, I didn't see very many either. He might not have been homeless, but he's probably a little destitute or something like that, or just an actor, as we have many of those as well.
You were part of a movie and you didn't know it. You're in some sort of B movie in Ireland as licorice bag guy in the credits.
Yeah, at least I'm famous for something, I guess.
You know, there's different stereotypes for things, and then sometimes they turn out to be true. And When I was in Ireland, they, you know, everybody knows Ireland potatoes. It's kind of a thing. And we had this one meal, and there was three kind of dishes that you got, three courses, like not courses, but three dishes, like, you know, your salad and your whatever.
Right.
Two of them were potatoes.
Right.
There was like, here's potatoes, and then here's your other thing of potatoes. But they were just cut differently.
Yeah.
I'm like, but they're both potatoes. Like, that doesn't count as two different dishes. How can you do that?
Yeah, we went to an Irish pub, and they have like this really nice buffet there. And it was pretty much a, like, corned beef, I think, like meat, a roast beef, and then like potatoes, potato soup, mashed potatoes, diced potatoes, everything potatoes.
Yeah.
Which is fine because we're part Irish, but yeah, it was a very interesting experience. There's potatoes everywhere, and even when we were there, first time we were walking around Ireland more in the countryside. This big truck pulls up beside us, and he's like, "Do you guys know the way to this town?" I'm like, "Sorry, we're tourists. We have no idea where we even are right now."
Yeah.
He's like, "Okay, no problem." He just kept driving.
I had the same thing happen to me, where somebody pulled up, because it's a lot of tourists all over. So I was just walking down the street, and they rolled the window down, and they started asking a question. First, like, syllable out of my mouth, they just took off.
Yeah.
Because they knew I wasn't a local. Wasn't a local. They knew I wasn't from around there. But so anyway, kind of interesting there. You never know who you're going to run into.
Yeah.
Might run into Conor McGregor if you're hanging out in Dublin in a black Escalade. So I don't know how many black Escalades there are there. Maybe that's pretty unique.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of big cars in Europe. Like, in America, especially in Oklahoma, there are tons of the big trucks and all that. But in Europe, they're the smaller European-style cars.
You wouldn't want a real big car or vehicle because the roads are so narrow and so forth. But,
yeah, you can barely fit just two small cars on some of those roads.
Yeah, for sure. Key David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG, two episodes today, so make sure you listen for that. And the archives are at kpcg.fm. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show also with your host Stephen Fleury from Edmond, Oklahoma, right here today, the headquarters campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College, and of course the home of KPCG 101.3. And a couple of topics today. One of them is the remilitarization of Germany. That's just another big topic that's going on. If it was a quieter news time in general, probably be even more focused on that. But there are so many things happening in so many regions of the world that you almost can't keep up with it all. And I mean, really important stories like this topic, the remilitarization of Germany.
Yeah, it is interesting, especially in American media where domestic politics do take up a pretty big share of the news coverage, and rightfully so. But a lot of these news stories, they're very subtle. And maybe smaller, and they don't get the media attention, especially when the world's so busy. But sometimes it's those underappreciated stories that turn out to be some of the most important. And that was true in the Cold War. There were tons of indications that the Berlin Wall might fall or Soviet Union might decline, but all the media was so focused on other things that when it happened, they were taken by surprise. When if they had this listened to sources a little more carefully and examine the news better, they would have seen it coming.
You also have a Twitter poll for us that you have at Abraham Blondo. And the most crucial moment of the American War of Independence, what are the options and what are your results so far?
Yes, so this Twitter poll, I'm writing an article on the American Revolution, and so I just want to see what people think about it. And so what was the most crucial point of the revolution? There are so many times where things could have gone very wrong for the Continental Army, but which one was most important? And there are four options. The first one is the Battle of Bunker Hill in Boston there, one of the first battles. The second is when Washington escaped from Long Island in New York with most of the army. The third is the Battle of Saratoga, where a British army surrendered. And the fourth one is the surprise attack on Trenton, New Jersey, after Valley Forge and the Christmas Eve's attack.
That's the one that came to mind off the top of my head. Not saying that is the most important, maybe the most famous.
Yeah.
But that's the one that I thought of. How have people responded to that?
Yeah, so it's I think it's more of an indication of what's been mostly written about that history, because right at this moment, the latest results I do have, the surprise attack at Trenton, New Jersey, is the is the one, has barely being out Bunker Hill as the most important, crucial moment. Third place is the Saratoga. And last place is the retreat from Long Island, which I'm surprised by because personally I think the retreat from Long Island is the closest or was the nearest run thing of the whole American Revolution, where Washington just barely escaped through a lot of providential weather events completely being surrounded by the British Army.
Yeah, it's and of course the crossing of the Delaware, right? That's the famous painting.
Yes,
which George Washington there. Yeah, it's interesting. I think before I read a few books on it, I'm no expert, but before I read a few books on it, I guess I kind of had a pretty romanticized vision of the U.S. forces. And then when I read about it, they were a pretty ragtag bunch. Outside of Washington himself, who was more of a military guy and a little more obviously versed in how to conduct a military, it was a pretty ragtag group, didn't have a lot of supplies. So it was different than what I kind of envisioned based upon, I don't know what I based it on, movies or something. But when you read about it, they were a pretty rough group.
Yeah. When you look at all the facts and all the accounts of what happened, America had no business winning that war. They were fighting one of the best armies in the world, the superpower at the time, and hardly any military experience. Even Washington had never commanded an army before the Revolution, so he was learning as he went too. I just read something really interesting about that, where Washington and the Congress's secretary, who had been to almost all the sessions of Congress, they were thinking about writing memoirs about the American Revolution, but then they realized they knew all the secrets and that it might tarnish the vision of what America's birth, take away from the glory of it. Once you learn about all the near escapes and the bitter infighting and all the blunders they made, that would tarnish the history and people's memory of that. So they decide not to write memoirs of Washington and this, I forget his name, but the Congress's secretary. So I think that that kind of sums up what they thought, and they just said only two words need to describe America's birth, and that's divine providence.
Yeah, and I also kind of had this notion that people were pretty moral and so forth, but a lot of what you read, they were pretty ragtag in every sense of the word. They had good leadership at the top, but the people themselves were not always as upstanding as maybe I would have thought. So they, you know, it wasn't as if the great moral forces, you know, won or something. It was like you say, divine providence there. So yeah. That's a historical overview. I'm sure every individual was a little different, but anyway, some of the history was a little different than what I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at right now. And you contrast that to where America is today, because when you see the birth of America and all the near scrapes with disaster, and even since then, all the times in American history where we were teetering on some kind of bad event, that usually wasn't a man who did something amazing. It was some kind of weather event or some kind of hand of providence that really tipped America over the edge. That should get people thinking about what we need today, because even Washington knew he didn't win the war. Washington lost more battles than he won during the war, but they still won anyway. And so I think we obviously don't have anyone of the caliber of the founding fathers in the nation today, but we do still need that divine providence that he recognized.
Yeah, we have a really good write-up on all that history, the United States of Written Prophecy. You can get that at thetrumpet.com if you don't have that. And also Key David program from this past week on Great Again addresses that. America wants to be great again. That's a slogan that Donald Trump, president-elect Donald Trump, won with. And can he do it? Can a person do it? That's the question there. So make sure you check out that program when you get a chance if you haven't seen it already. This is a really interesting write-up you've got here. This is it's a blog from the Times of Israel. So, you know, again, it's not like it's an opinion piece. But the headline is, Obama might recognize a state of Palestine with East Jerusalem as the capital on January 16th, 2017, ? They're questioning, what would this happen? Civil rights and Martin Luther King Jr. Day. So again, it's an opinion piece, but it's an interesting it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, this isn't a, nothing has been confirmed about what the plans of President Obama and the administration are concerning Israel in the last few days he is in office. But this blog and some even from the Washington Post and others, they are speculating that based off of reports, based off of some inside information they have received, that there is a chance that President Obama might recognize a state of Palestine. So right now, the state of Israel is the only nation. The Palestinians aren't a recognized state, not a country. And there are always ongoing negotiations there in the peace process. But at the United Nations, what they're saying here is that on January 16th, so that's a very important day for a lot of reasons, but in the article he points out that that's Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important to people like President Obama, who prides himself on being a civil rights champion and all that, that on that day it's very symbolic, and it could be a day where he chooses to announce something about the peace process in Israel, something that he's been wanting to do for a long time. He wants to be the one to solve the problem there.
Right.
And so a lot of people are I think, a little scared that he might recognize the state of Palestine. So the United States will declare that there is a Palestinian nation in the Middle East and that they have a claim to East Jerusalem as the capital, and that basically everything that Israel won in the 1967 war must be given back immediately so that they can form their Palestinian state.
Well, who knows, you know, obviously what would happen there, but there were a lot of reports that people were nervous, Israel was nervous that the president was going to do something before he left, and he's done a few pretty significant things already. Is that it? You know, who knows? But you are talking about legacy moves. He does want to do all these things. We saw from the Iran deal how he is just absolutely, you know, determined to make things happen, even flying in the face of all common sense, you know, striking up a deal with Iran. So he can walk out there and say, well, I had this deal with Iran. It's been a disaster. But he wanted it so badly that they did whatever it took, including, I mean, Ben Rhodes said they just lied about everything. I don't, what did he call it? Fiction, but I mean.
Right.
That's lying. What fiction is. Yeah, that's what it is. Maybe it sounds a little nicer than lying. You know, you go to the bookstore, you don't say, where's the liar section? You know, where's the fiction section? A little bit of a difference sometimes. But in any event, they lied about that. So who knows what will happen, but you do have this leader in place that's on his way out, only a few days left. Well, it's just really ideological in some of these things. And like we read earlier, he has a belief that he is a special gift to the world, depending on who you are in the world, I guess. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and it is, I think this isn't something that's so far out there that it's impossible to happen. I mean, these are some pretty reputable people putting their reputations on the line with these blogs. And we have seen the cards falling into place. First, Jimmy Carter went over there again earlier in the year, and he suggested that
he's still alive?
Yes, yeah. Okay. He's still going to the Middle East. As the unofficial ambassador for something.
For HUD for Humanity?
Yeah.
He's got to be like 90-something.
Yeah, he's not doing too well.
Yeah, he's really he's old. Wow, okay.
Yeah, he went over there again, talked with the Palestinian leaders, and said that President Obama should recognize a Palestinian state. That was Jimmy Carter's advice, because we all know Jimmy Carter was such a genius in geopolitics when he was president. But then we also saw the UNESCO decide that the Jews have no historical claim to the Temple Mount, to Jerusalem, that they can't really excavate there without certain regulations. So that was the first blow. And then the last one we just saw, where the United States abstained from voting on that it's illegal for Jerusalem or Israel to build settlements in the eastern part of Jerusalem and the West Bank. So we've seen these things start falling into place, and they keep pushing the envelope more and more to where the absolute worst thing they can do for Israel is to recognize a Palestinian state, because that would just compromise the very existence of Israel. And we've even seen And other pieces, there's one from The Atlantic where Benjamin Netanyahu is coming out swinging at the rest of the world for what they're doing. And so if this was to happen, one of the possible situations that could occur from such an announcement would be another war between Israel and Palestine, because if Israel does not give in to what President Obama declares, the Palestinians will think they're justified in fighting a war for their capital, for their justified state. And so that would, this could possibly just start another huge conflict, especially over Jerusalem there.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the Jews, historically, they've had things like this happen to them before, where well, if you look at leaders in the past, anciently, Antiochus, for example, he had some defeats, and he was enraged. And what did he do? He went after the Jews, right? And he destroyed them. So they historically, they've had a lot of persecution and a lot of suffering. And so you have something similar where a leader's on his way out, kind of bitter about it from what he's even saying. And he seems to be going after them, like worse than ever. Not like they were ever friends, obviously, but he really seems to be venting his anger over there in Israel.
Yeah. Anciently, Antiochus Epiphanes, about 150 BC, it's in that time period, the Romans stopped him from conquering Egypt. He was defeated. He felt humiliated. And so when he was going back to his home in Syria, he was so enraged that he did all these atrocities against the Jews, and he took out his anger on them. And there was some espionage there by the Jews themselves. He just took out his wrath on them. And that's where Hanukkah comes from the Maccabees fighting against Antiochus. But yeah, it's just that historical comparison just keeps getting stronger. And Gerald Fleury, in his book, America Under Attack, brought that out many, many years ago, that the defeat of Antiochus takes out his anger on the Jews in the worst way we've ever seen in history. Besides the Holocaust, that came much later. But politically, we've never seen America go after Israel. We've always been their allies. Jimmy Carter was the one who did set the precedent about not having the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, but in Tel Aviv. So he's the one who's maybe been a little more anti-Israel in his outlook. But most presidents have been very supportive of Israel. So the fact that we're seeing a president just take these shots at maybe Netanyahu personally, but also at Israel, is just unprecedented. And it's nothing to do with American policy. It's more like a personal vendetta.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it'd be interesting to do is go back and find all the quotes over the last 8 years talking about how they're a great ally of ours, how we really love Israel from the president, just to stack them all up and be like, now, wait a second, you said that, but then you did this other thing. It's just interesting. Words don't mean a whole lot, usually, unless they're true.
Yeah, and there was that picture of him lighting the candelabra on Hanukkah with, I think it was an Israeli president. I forget the leader there. When ironically, he's the one, he might not do this, but if he does, he could be the one who takes away all that ancient history of the Jews where the temple is and give it to their enemies.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens here in the last, how many days is it until the next?
January 20th is the day where inauguration. Trump's inaugurated.
Yeah, okay, so well, anyway, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Keep your eyes on the headlines and thetrumpet.com and kpcg.fm. Here is a list of some companies that have had a pretty bad 2016. The stock market's booming, but not everybody's doing well. Matter of fact, most people aren't doing all that well. A couple of the companies had a rough year. Yahoo started the year by getting rid of 15% of its workforce. That's always a fun, you know, the new calendar year. Yeah, you're fired. The struggling tech firm then admitted it had previously suffered not one but two massive data breaches affecting more than a billion users. Now, that's not a good thing. You got to do some damage control then when you've had those things happen.
Yeah, it's not good for business.
Yeah, you'd hate to be in that that meeting, you know, where it's brought up. You know, we've had a data breach, and it's affected a billion users. And then once everybody calms down, you're like, actually, there were two. Do you bring them both up together? Do you kind of soften it? I don't know. There's been a few companies that have laid off a fair number of people. Even here in Oklahoma, we've had some of the oil companies and energy companies do that. Samsung didn't have a great year. That's not good for me. I got a Samsung phone.
Yeah.
The year blew up in spectacular fashion for the South Korean electronics giant. Its problems began when it had to recall millions of Galaxy Note 7 smartphones after the high-end devices started bursting into flames. It then made a mistake by the recall by offering replacement Note 7 phones that was said were safe but actually turned out to be prone to catching fire as well. Can you imagine that? Your phone bursts into flames. They're like, sorry about that. We'll send you a new one. That one blows up. You're like, now, come on now. You know, you can't all blow up, can they?
Yeah. Maybe they just need a flame-resistant case on them and they'll be fine.
My phone is not blown up yet, so I'm glad about that. I would not want that to happen. Maybe I don't have enough stuff on it. I need more apps and games and things. Wells Fargo didn't have a great year. They shocked Americans in September by firing 5,300 employees, which had secretly created as many as 2 million unauthorized accounts. Strange. CEO John Stumpf was, they questioned him, I guess, harshly at congressional hearings, and eventually he had to step down. So that's one of those where I kind of saw the headline, but I never paid a ton of attention. I don't do anything with Wells Fargo, but I guess that was a big deal.
Yeah, I think they are one of the biggest banks in America, or one of the oldest. I forget which it is, but they have a big part to play in the whole American economy, especially in securities and loans and that kind of thing. So I do remember hearing about this, but I don't deal with Wells Fargo either. So, but I guess it turned out to be bigger than I thought.
Deutsche Bank had some problems. They say hangovers from the financial crisis are still lingering for many big financial firms, and Deutsche Bank's has proved particularly painful this year. Already struggling with weak profits and demoralizing job cuts, Germany's biggest lender was hit in September by a U.S. demand for $14 billion to settle claims it packaged up toxic mortgages in the lead-up to the financial crisis. It's always amazing to me when international like penalties are put out there. Like, well, you owe us. Says who? Who are you going to ask about it? And this goes back and forth. Europe against the U.S. We see that quite a bit. Twitter had a bad year, I guess. Twitter started 2016 with a plummeting stock price and the admission that it was losing users at the end of last year. Hopes that the company might find a way out of its predicament by being bought up by a bigger player went up in smoke in October, I guess. So I haven't been totally following Twitter as well, but we still use Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter, KPCGFM. But it changes, right? And now Snapchat's like the thing.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard anyway.
Yeah, and Vine, that was Twitter's video app that went out of business.
That died, yeah.
So Instagram's the big player, I think, and that's taking away a lot of business, and Facebook as well. I mean, that's the other big one.
Facebook, here's an interesting one about Facebook. This is not part of that list. This is a different story. Germany considers fining Facebook $522,000 per fake news item. So that's bizarre to me in many ways. It says, in the name of combating harms from false news, the German government next year will consider the bill, which has bipartisan support, that will allow both official and private complainants, it's not a word I use very often, to flag content that is considered fake news. That is considered fake news. Well, I don't know. You can consider anything fake news.
Yeah.
I could say, you know, it's 40 degrees, and you're like, nah, I don't believe you. It's fake. I mean, maybe it's 41. The law would also force the social networks, they say, to create in-country offices focused on responding to takedown demands and would make these networks responsible for compensation if a post by individual users were found to slander someone. So how are you going to do that? Like, that would be, if they actually did that, that would be the end of Facebook, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because isn't that why people use Facebook?
Yeah.
In general.
You have to call it Fakebook.
Yeah.
Start a new one. But, I mean, slander. Now, I know there's probably a legal definition for slander, but a lot of write-ups on things as benign as, say, sports, I guess it's, you could consider it slander, maybe. If you say, I don't like so-and-so, they're no good at that sport. I mean, that's what those articles are about. We think this is a good player. We think this is a bad player. Is it slander? I mean, probably not. But again, that starts to get a little weird. Like, what can you say, what can you not say? And so this is kind of a global thing now, this fake news business.
Yeah, I think this is kind of going to a dangerous spiral where we're starting to look at regulation. But who regulates the news? Who regulates independent private companies? Can countries penalize private companies who have the right of free speech in their own country? It just brings up a lot of legal issues, but also I think the biggest one is, well, who defines what fake news is? The German government or people just complaining about it? It depends also on the legal definitions in each country. They're different. So it's just kind of a big tangled mess. And I think it could lead to some dangerous provisions, especially if Facebook takes upon themselves to weed out certain news items because they think they're fake. Well, that could lead to overregulation of news where you can't really get anything that's even real after a while.
Oh, right. And if let's say they actually did something like this and people came in and said, we think this is a fake news story or we don't like it, we think it's slander, and Facebook, you know, we're going to fine you $522,000. Well, what would they do? Well, they'd just pull you. They would just block you from using it. They'd be like, well, we'll just get rid of them. It's like sort of like bribery or a threat, I guess. You get them off of your site or we're going to fine you. You know, and what if you're a group that puts up or a person that puts up 20 stories a week? They're going to fine them $522,000 for every one that people deem is fake. I mean, what about like you know, think tanks or that type of institutions where they're just saying, hey, this could happen based upon history, based upon analysis. You know, has it happened? Well, not necessarily, but they're talking about what could happen. Is that fake news? It's just murky.
Yeah, you can see, I think everyone can see how easily this could turn into something that could infringe upon a lot of rights of that people have. And especially, I mean, $500,000 for every news story. I mean, that's a lot of money. Maybe not for Facebook, but over time. And even as well, I think you can see how powerful people who like Facebook, companies like Facebook are when a foreign entity is considering penalizing you because you could disrupt certain things with the information you're feeding people. And that's kind of this new age thing where Google and Facebook especially, they're the ones who decide the information you see. And so they're actually very powerful. But how do you regulate that? What do you do when they're private, when they're not government regulated? You're just opening a can of worms. But you're seeing just that people are seceding their responsibility to figure out for themselves what's right or wrong.
Well, I even wonder if it's just being done as an excuse for them to do what they want to do anyway, which is just cut people out of Facebook or whatever that they don't like. Say, well, we have to. They're going to fine us. Yeah.
Right.
Come on. Like, they're not sort of probably meeting about this. I mean, Zuckerberg is always meeting with everybody.
Yeah.
It seems almost like, who knows what's going on there, but that could be fake news.
Yeah.
What I just said. I was thinking, as far as fake news goes, I'm like, we'd have to delete everybody's account. You know? Look at me. I had a great vacation. No, you didn't. That's fake news. Maybe you did. I don't know.
What about The Onion?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, they're bare a parody. Maybe it's okay to be fake as long as you admit it or something. I don't know. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us here. For myself, Dwight Falk and Abraham Blondo, have a great rest of your Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.